Today on Her Turf at the Olympics, we will sit down with American wrestler Adeline Gray. Yesterday, the five-time world champ won her first Olympic medal.
We'll talk to multimedia sports journalist Shireen Ahmed to talk about the intersection of sexism, racism, and recent uniform controversies.
This podcast is presented by NordicTrack from iFit.
We're now joined by Olympic silver medalist Adeline Gray. Adeline, congratulations. We're so excited to talk to you. You had already accomplished so much in your career. You're the only American wrestler to ever win five world titles. What does it mean to add an Olympic medal to your collection?
It's incredible. I got to hold that silver medal in my hand up on the podium, and it really sunk in that I am an Olympic medalist, that I'm coming home for Team USA with a medal around my neck, and I couldn't be more happy.
You overcame so much. You were dealing with an injury at the Rio Olympics. Can you talk us through your decision to come back and make another Olympic run?
It was a tough decision. I wasn't sure if this is what I wanted. It was definitely a challenging time to kind of decide if my body was ready, if my mind was ready, if I was ready to move on. And a lot of athletes, I think, struggle with that decision to commit to another quad. And then for a quad to go an additional year when you make plans just makes it even more challenging. But I have a silver medal around my neck right now, and I'm just very happy that I stuck around and Kim coming back with hardware.
I know Lolo can relate to that, deciding to come back in another sport, though, for a year, right?
I have to, you know, that extra year, it didn't feel like a year. It felt more like another 2 years, correct? Like, what were the challenges trying to walk through that year? Was there doubts if you could hold on another year, or were you fully committed?
I definitely took some time to sit down with my family and decide if this was the decision to continue on. I had some teammates who decided to retire and kind of step away from the sport. And I admired their courage and their decision to do that. Because there's so many unknowns that happened with this COVID year. And there's so many things that are still happening here in Tokyo as we are still at the midst of what's happening in our world. And it's a challenge. It's been challenging the entire time, and we are approaching that. But luckily, wrestling teaches us a lot of great things, and I've been able to put those great things into practice with this challenging year that we've had. I've been able to be a little bit more flexible. I've been able to build some tools to mentally and physically keep myself a little bit healthier and happier. And it's an important thing to be able to do that.
You compete in the so-called heavyweight category. I know you've been outspoken about wanting to see bigger weight classes added. Can you explain the current weight class structure?
Yes. So our smallest weight class is 50 kilos, which is just over 100 pounds. And our largest weight class is 165 pounds or 76 kilos. So I am considered the super heavyweight. I am the largest woman that's allowed to compete in wrestling. And I have three younger sisters who all weigh slightly more than I do. And they would struggle to be able to have a place in my sport. And it's challenging for me to consider myself a big, strong woman. Because I am kind of average when it comes to our society. I'm 5'8", I weigh 165 pounds, and I kind of have to gain a little bit of weight to get to this weight class. And so I would love to see a true heavyweight division. We have 130 kilo men that are allowed to compete in the Olympics. And for some reason, the heavyweight cap for women is 165 pounds. And so I would like to see our weight class go down a little bit. And I would like to see the weight class go up a little bit. So hopefully we can start edging that weight categories up and down and create the diversity in our sport that we preach so often and is replicated in our college realms and in our youth leagues.
I love that you're outspoken about the different weight classes. But besides that, if we're talking about gender disparity in sports, it's certainly not a new topic. How would you evaluate the current landscape in wrestling?
Wrestling is growing, and there are so many people who are jumping on board with women's wrestling and providing opportunities, providing better coaching, providing just the access to sport. And it's so amazing to be a part of right now. I really believe that the medals like this are helping move that forward. And I am very proud to be part of that. I'm proud that these coaches are seeing women as athletes and are able to step on a mat and consider themselves coaches to an athlete, doesn't matter if it's a male or a female, going out there and giving them the same attention, giving them the same opportunities that they would give those young men. And I see wrestling just flourishing all over the country. And it's an amazing thing for young girls to get an opportunity to do in an individual sport. And wrestling teaches you a lot about yourself. And there's nothing wrong with young women learning how strong they can truly be.
Okay, Adeline, I have to ask this question as a two-time world champion in track and field, two-time for bobsled. Would you, with your five world championship gold medals, give, if you could only keep one, your five world championship gold medals or your now newly coveted silver Olympic medal, which one are you keeping?
I've had so much fun at the world championships, and I really consider them a tougher tournament than the Olympics because the entire world's allowed to be there. So I don't think I would give up my world titles. I know the world really cares every 4 years about the Olympics, but I have had so much joy and gratitude come from winning world titles and standing at the top of that podium and having my flag risen and knowing that I'm the best in the world. And that's truly special. And so I know this Olympic medal is important, but I wouldn't trade my five world titles.
I love that response. And you're absolutely right. I tell people this all the time. World championships is so much harder some years than the Olympics.
So hard.
It's
really?
Very tough.
Okay, wait. So I'm not going to put you on the spot in the way that I would really like to. But what I want to ask you is, out of those accomplishments that you mentioned for yourself,
would I trade it for an Olympic medal?
Well,
I'm the opposite of you,
yeah.
Adeline.
Would you?
With my four golds, I would absolutely trade it for an Olympic medal.
What?
Absolutely.
Why?
I'm sorry, Adeline. I don't know. I guess because I've been on the other side of that where it's just like people put so much pressure, like she said, on Olympic journeys and that it's just like it feels kind of incomplete without it. So,
got it.
But because now she has both, she's able to reflect back and say, you know what? Actually, this is where my peace comes from.
Yeah.
And since I'm still kind of one-sided, I don't have that perspective. I'm crying, Adeline.
Oh, no. Wait a minute. But you know what's interesting about that is you guys both have this unique connection about competition, right? You're both so competitive, clearly, obviously, because mm-hmm. you're so great at what you do. How is that in both of your sports? Like, do you guys think that you can vibe that off of one another, that's similar?
Adeline, I was watching you compete, and I gotta say, it was intense. I don't know if I could survive in your sport, so you have to tell us, like, when you're in there and you're exhausted, it's the end of a match, and it's coming down to the wire, like, how are you pushing through?
It's moment by moment. I think it's going to be a lot of similarities in every sport. I mean, you get to that point of fatigue, you get to that point of true focus. And I think you're just approaching each position with, you know, a strong back and integrity when you are trying to just win that one position. And so it's moment by moment. And I don't think the last few seconds changed versus the beginning of that match. But I feel the same way. I just watched my teammate go out and she unfortunately lost today. And I was crying in the stands. I was like, this is so hard. I can't believe we do this. I'm like, how did I do this? Like, I just was really so emotional today, just watching the intensity and really the fear that comes with stepping on this grand stage.
What is that fear?
Oh, it really is overwhelming. And I feel that way at world championships sometimes too. You know, you walk into that arena and you're battling someone. And I think wrestling is a very intimate thing because you're standing across from somebody who's trying to beat you up, like physically beat you up. And so it is it's a scary fight or flight kind of moment where you're standing there and we choose to fight. And I think it shows a lot of integrity in ourselves and a lot of trust that we are going to go out there and try our best to demonstrate our skills in a safe and effective manner to come out on top.
What's the moment when you're in it that is the most difficult? Can you share that insight into, like, when you're in the moment, you're doing what you do, what is the hardest part of that?
I think the hardest part is just like trusting that, are you ready in that moment? You know, you've done the mental training, you've done the physical training, and now you're stepping onto that actual stage and you kind of have this like moment of fear, whether you shake hands, you're like, oh no, am I warmed up enough to really start this match? Or in the middle of the match, you might get behind and all of a sudden have to kick it in that next gear and have those moments happen where you have to rise to those occasions. And I think that's the scary part, but also the part that is very gratifying when you are able to be successful in those moments.
What is your message to young girls in the sport?
my message to young girls in wrestling is just to keep working hard, set those goals, have them be process goals, not just outcome goals. I want to make sure that they understand that sports can really be an avenue for you to learn about yourself, to learn how to mentally and physically become stronger and build tools to be that you can use for the rest of your life, whether that just be creating a healthy body or creating a strong and stable mind that can take you from one spot in the in your life to the next, and know and trust yourself that you can build a support system around you. And sports have done that for me. And I just really hope that young girls can go out there, try some individual sports, see what they can learn about themselves, and really thrive in a life that has a lot of opportunities open to them. And they're just going to keep getting bigger with this momentum of women in sport.
I'm so positive that young girls everywhere will be inspired by your competition. We're so thankful you joined us today, and congratulations on your silver medal.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
A woman's attire in sports has certainly evolved over the years, from long skirts to short skirts and everything in between. No matter the changes over time, one thing is clear. What women wear during athletic competition continues to make headlines. And the conversation also includes race and religion. For the first time in history, the Olympic softball players are no longer required to wear shorts.
They told us the reason we had to wear shorts versus pants is they needed to be able to differentiate the men from the women. How ridiculous is that? Finally, we were able to actually go, yeah, we're going to call you out on that, a little sexist, a little just ridiculous.
And recently, Paralympian Olivia Breen received criticism from an official for shorts that were deemed too short.
She was like, "Your briefs are too revealing. I think you should consider buying a pair of shorts." And I just said to her, "It's joking."
Although not contested at the Olympics, women's beach handball has been making headlines too. The International Handball Federation fined the Norwegian team 1,500 euros, claiming their shorts were too long. And in Tokyo, in an effort to desexualize the sport, the German gymnasts have been sporting unitards, fully covering their legs, instead of the standard bikini-cut leotards.
I stand with their decision to wear whatever they please and whatever makes them feel comfortable. I feel comfortable in a leo, and that's more my style.
I do believe that leotards are kind of sexualized. The whole point is to look at them.
We have diamonds. For crying out loud, like, there are diamonds on our leotards.
But women, from athletes to celebs, are supporting one another and taking a stand against the critics. But really, this all begs the question, why can't society focus more on a woman's athletic ability and less on her attire?
There is so much to talk about. To discuss this topic further, we are joined now by multi-platform sports journalist Shireen Ahmed. Shireen, we appreciate you being here. And not that this topic is new, but there have been so many conversations about uniforms recently. What have you thought about seeing all of these stories in recent weeks?
Well, first of all, I'm really glad that they're getting the media attention that they deserve, because as you mentioned, Lindsay, this is not new. This is something that in particular the Norwegian beach handball team had been speaking to the Federation about and falling on perhaps an uncaring and undisturbed executive committee. I would like to point out and remind everybody that the policies for what athletes wear globally are decided by men in boardrooms. And I think that's a really important starting point. So when I'm knowing this and something that I've researched for over 10 years, because it directly overlaps with my work on Muslim women in sport and the lack of uniform accommodations, the deliberate exclusion, and who exactly makes the rules on this. So this is something that I feel has not been given enough media attention, because first of all, it's not a very sexy story, right? Women trying to advocate for themselves and defend their bodily agency in addition to being professional athletes is not a great story on many fronts.
Shireen, in track and field, I feel like athletes have a choice in what they wear, but there are some sports where there isn't a choice. Why are these regulations in place the way they are?
Well, first of all, as I mentioned, the rules are arbitrarily decided by men. And I mean, for a very long time, the AIBA, the Boxing Federation, wouldn't even allow Olympic boxers to not wear skirts. I mean, this is something that you think, I mean, women are performing at the highest echelons of sport in the Olympics and major tournaments, but we're not allowed to decide our own clothing. And then the flip side of that is that women who choose to cover more modestly, who may want to not wear the prescribed bikini bottoms or short shorts or kits or whatever it has, aren't permitted to do so. So for example, if I wanted to wear a hijab, or maybe not even wear a hijab, wanted to wear a compression shirt underneath something or on top of something, I wouldn't be permitted to do that. And I would like to remind everybody, there is no linkage between safety here. I spent 10 years contacting different football federations, trying to find out why hijabs were deemed unsafe. There was no example concretely of a hijab hurting a player or an opponent. Jewelry and braids, yes, but not clothing. Clothing has not been ever documented in sport on global federations such as volleyball, basketball, to have hurt or injured. So there's no precedent for this. It's literally men creating problems for women.
When you talk about the research you've been doing, how easy has it been for you to find those answers?
Well, I mean, I am, without aging myself too much, I actually wrote letters as well. That's okay. How long I've been interested in this, and emails that go unheard, because it's actually, quite frankly, not a discussion that people feel important enough to talk about. How often have we heard about this before the Norwegian beach handball team went viral? And social media is an important point in this and will advance this discussion. But as a racialized journalist who knows that the attention given to Black and brown women and their bodies and the lack of attention given to their own advocacy and what they're talking about, I've seen it. I've felt it. I feel like sometimes I have been screaming into the abyss. I've been coaxing fellow journalists to cover the story. The Fédération de Football Française, the FFF in France that governs soccer in France, does still not permit women in hijab to coach, to officiate, or to play at a recreational all the way to a professional level. This is a deliberate exclusion of women. And, you know, it's ongoing.
You said you felt like you're screaming into an abyss. Well, what about the athletes that are competing and they have to deal with these regulations? What are their steps to take if they feel uncomfortable in a uniform? If it's so hard for you to break through, are they just disqualified? What are their options?
Well, I think we all remember this works in a cycle. So the athletes are trying to talk about it, trying to amplify, trying to disseminate this information, and social media has facilitated that. But if media doesn't cover it, what are their choices? They can write letters, they can speak to their coaches. Hopefully the associations or federations support them. And in many cases, they do. I would like to point out that the International Gymnastics Federation actually has a policy that gymnasts and acrogymnasts as well can wear a full unitard. They're not forced to wear that. So if a club or an association is insisting that they wear a leotard, that's actually against the policy of the International Federation in Gymnastics. Whereas if you had a basketball or soccer, and we know from FIBA, the governing body of basketball, that there were players who wore hijab. Bilqis Abdulkadir is a very prominent example of that, who literally had to create a change.org petition with 130,000 signatures to even get their attention. Because if you've got maybe a dozen, and I wrote about this, and in fact, I was the only sports journalist in the continent to push to write it. And, you know, this is a story that is important. We don't want to exclude these stories from the history of women's sport.
What are some of the spaces in which these regulations tend to be the most harmful to women of color and Muslim women in particular?
Well, I mean, I would say it's not every sport that has these type of regulations. For example, rowing doesn't have this type, archery or badminton, or they don't. I'm not going to say that every single sport is like this, but, you know, the major ones. And sometimes I'll argue that contact sports such as soccer, we saw it with soccer. The ban was formally in place 2007 and then rescinded officially in 2014. But I think it's not only the sport itself, but it's the process by which these policies are created. So we had it in soccer. We certainly had it in basketball. The FIVB, which is the Volleyball Federation, suspended it temporarily to allow women to play in beach. So then, I don't know if you recall, in Rio 2016, we had Doha El-Khobashi, who was an Egyptian player, who was wearing a rash guard and a hijab playing beach volleyball. So that was a striking image, right? That she was permitted to do so. We still don't see it on the court though. So we have a while to go. And very recently, in the last 2 years, the Boxing Federation finally rescinded and is now allowing boxers to do it. But I think one of the things is we still see the way that Black women's bodies are treated. Like, you know, very recently, the FINA did not permit soul cap because they said that it doesn't conform to the shape of the head. Like, what does that even mean? Whose head? So we still see it happening. We see Serena Williams recently being under scrutiny, the way Sha'Carri Richardson's body was spoken about in the qualifiers. Women still are not allowed to be and wear what they want. And I find that extremely problematic. It's not about safety. It's not about performance. This is about control of women's bodies.
Well, what's the next most powerful step in changing this to get the result and having the female athletes have their choice?
Well, I think conversations like this one are extremely important. And, you know, I thank you both for allowing me to come here to talk about this, because also the racial analysis is very important here. What makes me uncomfortable is the way that the Norwegian issue of beach handball, although it's critically important to talk about it, a lot of the discussion was devoid of this particular analysis of that. This is something that Black and brown women have been experiencing for a long time. So to remind everybody that this is an ongoing battle and to show solidarity, like pay attention to what's happening in France, pay attention to what's happening with exclusion of women and, you know, sharing things on social media, signing those petitions online, all this stuff matters. And to really be aware, because we're beginning to see more information being shared. And now it's what we do with it. The next steps.
Are there concerns like that from track and field that you've dealt with or from any sport in general?
Yeah, there's concerns even as a pro runner. I mean, there's been times where, you know, it's your time of the month and like other runners are worried that there's going to be a tampon string hanging out of the small briefs because they're the way they're cut. But the difference is in track and field, as your pro, you have options for uniforms. But in high school, when you're just starting to compete, you're giving the standard uniform kit. So that's the one uniform you have. And if it's not accommodating, it's just not accommodating. And so, I think that, like she said, step number one is having options, because then that gives you the option to choose what you're more comfortable in competing in.
What would you say has been the level of concern from your experience? Not to get too in the weeds here, but from your perspective, I think it's fascinating because we don't have these conversations.
I think another step would also be just more attention on the media, because, you know, I don't know about other sports, but in track and field, the camera is directly behind the start line, which when we're in the blocks, our butt is in the air, which can be a very sexualized kind of picture. So I've seen long jumpers getting close-ups of their uniforms, digging their uniforms out of, you know, just close-ups of their butts, essentially, as they get out. And, you know, maybe not having as those sexualized shots, just focusing on the competition itself and not the body parts.
That's a very salient point. What are your thoughts on that, Shireen?
I completely agree. I think that we would be remiss if we didn't say that athletes in themselves, their movements are beautiful, they're important, and they're powerful, and they will be contorting and moving in different ways. But there's a very fine line between celebrating sport and the physiological movement and, you know, the anatomy, and then sexualizing it, and then restricting women from what they're going to wear is a nonsensical. There's no proof that it, you know, impedes or helps in any type of performance. There's no valid proof on that in any of the sports that I've looked at. And track and field in particular, you'll see other women, like there was like many years ago, there was a Bahrain track and field athlete named Yusra Ruqayya Al-Gharib, and she was participating in a full covering, but that didn't impede her time. Like, I think that what this idea is that women only have to look one certain way is very dangerous. And it's forcing women out of clothing is as violent as forcing them into it. And those are the conversations we need to be having in sports.
That's so powerful. Is there anything that fans can do to help?
Well, I think paying attention to the conversation is the first thing. I have been doing this for over a decade, but I've only really seen the conversation start to include different layers, because it's a very complex issue and there are many layers to it, so that people are sharing information, whether social media posts. And I do really appreciate the linking to understanding the fact that not all women experience the same way. And I don't want to take away from the fact that there may be athletes who do want to wear leotards, but that's also their choice, be it, you know, a bikini, be it shorts, be it a full covering compression tights. Women should have the choice. This is essentially what this is about letting women wear what is comfortable and safe for them to compete in. And when people keep remembering that, and one of the things that I think has really bothered me about this is the reason why this has gone unheard for so long is because women are an afterthought still in many situations. And in boardrooms, federations or high school athletics associations, or even on an international level, they don't think of women as a priority and don't center their experiences. So I want that to change.
Are there things that you think women can do to help speed that change up? Is there more that we can do as the women who want those positions, right, to get more women or voices in boardrooms that are heard and that matter?
One of the things that I feel strongly about is men are scared of women who can make informed and practical decisions for themselves in sport. We see it in sport. Although this is a place where arguably you have women, some of the most incredible, resilient women in the world, right? Men are still weary of that. So we keep having these conversations. We keep sharing the information and paying attention and realizing that not every experience is the same. A woman might want to wear a bikini. That's her right. A woman might want to cover fully. That is also her right in sport and out of sport as well.
Shireen Ahmed, we appreciate your expertise and your thoughts. Certainly a lot is inspirational, and certainly there is room for a lot of change. Thank you so much for joining us on Her Turf at the Olympics.
Thank you for having me.
That's it for our show today. And as always, be sure to follow On Her Turf on Instagram and Twitter and listen to extended conversations from our discussions just like this one with Shireen today over on Apple Podcasts. Until tomorrow, good night.
This podcast is presented by NordicTrack from iFIT.